Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 44. We're in the middle of the preface. I'll tell you the paragraph in a second. It's old single column, page 498. Now, if you have the paragraphs properly numbered, it would be paragraph number 8. If that list of 7 items in the preface there has a separate paragraph numbers, then it would be paragraph 15. But it's that paragraph that's the third one after the list that starts with all these activities. Okay. So we and we kind of got through half of that preface. You can see it's quite a great big preface, and the remainder is a lot bigger than the number of paragraphs makes it appear. This is actually very, very important element of the fifth epical revelation, the relating to the fundamental step forward in a philosophic worldview that the revelators are encouraging us to make. And you'll see as we get into it tonight just how significant it is in many ways. But it's worthy of a lot more sort of highlighting than just that, you know, large paragraph break that occurs right before we're going to start there. I mentioned at the end last time that the archangel that, you know, wrote this paper wants to make an effort to get us to genuinely take a hold of the fact, or begin to take a hold of the fact, that spirit is a substance. The fact of spirit, the reality of spirit, is something far beyond anything that anyone has ever imagined. The greatest mind, the least mind that's ever lived, no matter how religious that mind might have been. Spirit is something way beyond where humans have ever gone in their recognition of reality. And if we can begin to make this step towards this genuinely new picture, to actually have 3 elements in our philosophy instead of just at best 2, matter and mind, we can add spirit, a whole new domain of progress opens up to us. And like I said, as I will give you a little clue about as we get into it here. But let's just start with the facts of the matter, as he does here, you'll see. So let's just jump in, and we'll just take it one paragraph at a time here to try to begin to think about not only, like I said, that goal of spirit as a substance, but also the more immediate issues that he is bringing up in trying to get us towards that goal of thinking about spirit more literally. All right.
All these activities of the Mirantia and spirit worlds are real. To spirit beings, the spirit world is a reality. To us, the material world is the more unreal. The higher forms of spirits freely pass through ordinary matter. High spirits are reactive to nothing material excepting certain of the basic energies. To material beings, the spirit world is more or less unreal. To spirit beings, the material world is almost entirely unreal, being merely a shadow of the substance of spirit realities.
Okay, so you notice at the end, substance of spirit realities. There's other spots in the book where they literally use the expression spirit substance too. Let's see, that's the bottom line of his opening salvo here. Now, you know, one thing to keep in mind, as I just mentioned, you know, who is the author? It's an archangel. Remember when we read about the archangels, back when we were reading about the personalities of local universes, they are the highest spirit beings in the local universe that are created in large numbers. They are a high spirit, okay, as he is referring to there. He is not immediately relatable to midwayers, a lot of the lower beings. He's a very high being. In regard to the energy of his body, and so his tangibility to lower beings. All right, so all these activities in Marantian spirit worlds are real. Now, that may sound like, okay, you don't appreciate the full impact of that statement if you don't know the history of the use of the word real, reality, in philosophic terms. Okay. The word real is just coming from the Latin word for thing. Okay, and the immediate impact of that word, intent of it, is to point to the contrast between my inner life, our inner lives, and the outer life, the external world, in contrast to some inner domain. The external world, the objective domain, and the, historically, that word reality has pointed to that. Not something in your mind, but something that's out there, separate from any subjectivity of your mind. It's objectively just a thing that is. Okay? See, so when he says all these activities of the Marantian spirit worlds are real, they involve things. There is an external world of Marantia and spirit. Okay? Humans have always, thought of something that they're going to call spirit or soul or something like that as being part of just the inner life and designating maybe nothing at all different from just the word mind. Maybe it's just the word spirit was just another synonym for that not matter thing. In a dualistic picture. But to literally think of it as part of the external world, that there is spirit substance and Marantia substance, that like we were mentioning at the end last time when they talked about the spirit halls of Salvington there in that previous paragraph. Literally, there is a building made out of spirit substance. It's not spiritual halls. It's not a hall that has lots of material ornateness and gives you fancy feelings. Okay? It's not a spiritual hall first. It's a spirit hall. It's made out of spirit substance, that building. Okay. It's in the external world. Okay. That's the impact of that opening statement. When he says to spirit beings, the spirit world is a reality. Okay. So to an archangel, his external world is made out of spirit substance, not material substance. Matter would be something that he would only relate to in the inner life. Okay? Whereas you are the reciprocal. Matter, you know, for you is the external world.
We pass through spirit.
And spirit is something, right, that you are trying to relate to at the highest reaches of your inner life only. Right? Like John just said, I mean, the fact that it literally is out here in the outer life, you know, let's say there's a giant spirit wall right in front of me. You know, maybe there is, for all I know. I mean, maybe the beings have built a gigantic spirit wall, and this material building is plopped right in the middle of it. I mean, you know, but I can kick my foot forward, and it goes right through that spirit wall if it was sitting right in front of me, no matter how thick it was. Yeah?
Not to break the trend, you mentioned that midwares cannot see the...
Archangels.
Archangels, right?
Don't really. Yeah.
Okay. Well, they have a headquarters here.
Yeah, I'll get to that. Work. I'll get to that in just a second. That's coming up in the next paragraph. That's why I didn't say any more about that, because I was just, you know, get to that in the next paragraph.
So back to the spirit world.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about all that planets or whatever you want to call them. You know, architectural spheres they're made out of real material.
Right.
So. Do you think some of them are they all made out of, you know, material that we can touch and feel, you know, or are they made out of material that is spirit, you know, material?
If you go back,
one or some other.
You go back to the beginning of paper 11, one of the most mind-boggling sentences when you first start reading the Revelation in the entire book is... I was just going to read, it's just a sentence, but it's on page 118. It's the very beginning of paper 11. All of the intelligent creation of the universal Father is domiciled on material abodes. Right. I don't know about you, but when I first read that, when it first sunk in, you know, and it's like, wow, that is so radically different than anything that any human has ever thought. Okay? Every, you know, fanciful celestial being, angel, whatnot that humans have ever imagined, okay, they're saying they all are domiciled on material abodes. And then it's like, oh, heaven is the heavens. That's what they're telling me. That heaven isn't some, you know, mysterious alternative universe, parallel plane, you know, whatever. Heaven is the heavens. You know, the celestial beings live, the celestial...
world may be made out of spiritual materials.
No, we'll get that in a second. Okay, that fact that the celestial beings live on the things that we could look through a telescope at. Okay? You know, they don't live somewhere that you can only reach through some mystical journey in your inner life.
Even Havona.
Right? Even Havona. Even the Isle of Paradise. The Isle of Paradise is made out of dirt. The fanciest dirt that exists, but dirt nonetheless. Material substance. The Universal Father has his feet planted on the ground. He is grounded. Okay? You know, and see, as soon as you say that, oh, this has a lot more than scientific consequence. Okay, this has profound consequences about how I should try to ground my entire life, just like the Father did. And just like everyone has done, you know, in imitation of him. You know, let us all be like the Father and be grounded. You know, let us not shun the things of matter and try to float off into some untethered space so that I can be religious, quote unquote. You know, the more that you become ungrounded like that, the more farther you get removed from matter, the less potential you have to be religious at all.
Okay. Does say the world is spiritual,
that's
material.
Well, it's just like, we'll get to the details. Okay.
Again, paradise is material.
Right. Okay, and Okay, and so John was just saying, well, okay, well, what about, you know, the more material, the less spiritual, or vice versa, you know, and we're about to read about that too, okay? Start with the absolutes, right? You know, if you look at the nature of paradise spirit, the kind of spirit substance that the eternal Son's body is made out of, and you look at paradise energy, the kind of matter that the Isle of Paradise is made out of, absolutum, right? What does it say? You know, if you're sub-absolute being, like the consummator of universe destiny, say, or me, or any other sub-absolute being, and they look at those two substances, there's not one bit of observational difference, right? So, which is the shadow and which is the substance? Which is higher and which is lower? Right. Neither, right? Right. The point is what he's saying here, where he says, to material beings, the spirit world is more or less unreal. To spirit beings, the material world is almost entirely unreal, okay? Just because matter doesn't appear in the immediate external world to a spirit being doesn't mean that matter is less real than spirit. But you go, well, wait a minute, aren't these higher beings than me, and so don't they set the order of things? No. Which is higher, the Isle of Paradise or the Eternal Sun? They're at eye level. Neither is higher. They're the same. Right? So it's all a matter of perspective. To energy pattern, energy actuality, energy substance is more tangible. To spirit pattern, spirit substance is more tangible. But those two patterns are the same pattern in the hands of the source of pattern, the first source and center. If you're going to use the Father as a reference, he doesn't distinguish between the two. He doesn't know the difference between the two. He exists prior to the differentiation of spirit and matter. So which does he cherish more, spirit or matter? He can't cherish them more. He doesn't distinguish between the two. They're the same to him. He's no respecter of persons, to the point where the difference between power and personality is a difference in name only.
Doesn't it say that at the beginning, what, paper 16? Yeah. The Father, these things, universes don't, anyway.
Yeah, and again, I mean, not only, the two sides like of the parallel like that, personality and power, but even actuality and potentiality, right, are no different to him. Potentiality is just as hard and tangible to him as actuality is.
We evolve into spirit beings, which seems, from my point of view, to say that that I grow more spiritual and become, eventually a spirit substance.
Well, we're going to get to that. Let's not talk about that right now, because that's coming up in a few paragraphs here. Okay. There's a whole bunch of things that are coming up in succeeding paragraphs, so let's not explain everything in the first sentence here. Okay, let's just take it one step at a time. The key to unpacking something as complicated as a revelation is make sure you try to stay on, as focused on one paragraph as you can. Make sure you get that internalized, and then take the next paragraph, try to build that upon the previous one, right? Try to pull back on the reins of your unity consciousness a little bit that wants to do everything all at once. Right? Allow your individuality consciousness to just step methodically a little bit.
We got a question here. Is time and sequential order still the same in the spiritual?
Yes, they have just the same old sequentiality that we understand. It's not because, see, you don't transcend sequentiality when you go up to spirit. The fact that we think that you do is because we have so little relationship to the reality of spirit You know, we have to sort of let go of our grounding to have any relationship to it. Whereas for an archangel, it's really kind of the other way around. He's got the problem of making sure he doesn't let go of his grounding in spirit substance when he tries to get a greater relationship with matter.
He's stuck here.
Well, and we're going to, okay, and then, yeah, like you're saying about the archangel headquarters, you know, let's get to that here, coming up in the next paragraph. Let me just make sure we've got everything here. So, right, so you, when they say to be, and just, you know, going back to that second sentence, to spirit beings, the spirit world, right, like the external world, you know, that world, is what we're talking about, is a reality. The material world is the more unreal. See, the external world has, you know, has both of those substances in it. And it's just, which do you experience? There are some beings that experience both, as he'll say here shortly. Now there's a bunch of very mysterious things here, too, about the science of it, physics of it. The higher forms of spirits freely pass through ordinary matter. Okay, and then he says, high spirits are reactive to nothing material excepting certain of the basic energies. Okay, so the first statement seems completely straightforward to understand. It's like, okay, if he can't really see matter, you wouldn't expect him to bump his head on it. You'd expect him to pass right through it so that, you know, his sense of touch is in relationship to his sense of sight, just like it is for us. You know, I can see this arm of this couch, and I can touch the arm of this couch, and it's the same way for him. Okay, but then they throw in a little bit of confusion. Okay, so high spirits are reactive to nothing material, you know, but there isn't a period there, excepting certain of the basic energies. Okay, so what is he saying? So first of all, let's think about ourselves. Okay, so like when I put my hand down on the arm of this couch, it seems very solid. Let's start with the foundation of the physical as we went through in paper 42. Okay, this room and the entire master universe is contiguously pervaded by the force charge of space. Okay, none of us can feel it with our hand, bump our hand on it, stub our toe on it. You know, my hand is passing through the force charge of space like it's not there. It's just as not there-like as spirit substance. And I can go up through the whole sub-electronic domain, and my hand is still just going to pass through that energy like it's not there. This room is filled with all kinds of sub-electronic energy, and you know, none of us can see it, not even our scientific instruments basically observe it. Okay. Matter of fact, I can get all the way up to the electronic level, and there's still a degree of tenuousness that is in play. When I think about electron neutrinos, one of those really basic initial particles of the electronic level, just the electron neutrinos that are coming from the sun, right now, I mean, my fingernail has tens of billions of those electron neutrinos passing through it every second. Tens of billions, you know, every square centimeter of my body, you know, those electron neutrinos, just from the sun, let alone, you know, ones from coming from everywhere else in the universe, but just the ones coming from the sun, tens of billions, passing through me and the earth and everything else as, you know, as if we're not there. I mean, as far as, you know, I'm concerned about it and it's concerned about me, you know, I could be made out of spirit substance. For all it knows, it interacts with me not, you know, one whit. Okay, so even at the electronic level, okay, we recognize some shades of this. It's only, you know, especially when you get all the way to the molecular, you know, I'm experiencing the molecular level of the arm of this couch. You know, when it gets up to mass, you know, atoms and especially, you know, molecular structure, you know, that's where, you know, what I interact with. I don't interact with everything below that, basically. And I certainly don't interact with the automatons, you know, or even the system of 100 automatons, you know. If there's a system of 100 automatons in front of me here, I could pass my hand right through it, and you know, and it just like it'd be just like that electron neutrino. Okay, it wouldn't interact. There's lots of space, remember, in my hand. You know, and the you know that particle just goes right through the spaces in my hand. Okay, all right. So think about that. All of that more basic energy is a lot like, experientially to me, like spirit substance, not experienceable, not tangible. So you could say, just if you thought that through, it's like, well, you know, I wonder, do you suppose spirit substance and those more basic energies might be, you know, actually more similar than just, you know, that, you know, simple, crude experiential similarity for me? Yeah, what do they say? High spirits are reactive to nothing material excepting certain of the basic energies. So, these, you know, a spirit being has some relationship to the lower levels of energy, of individuation, substance. But it doesn't have any, you know, experience, sight, touch with the molecular, you know, this molecular room we're in. It doesn't see any of the colors. See, all the colors in this room, all the textures, all of that is molecular level phenomena. It's not even atomic, right? I mean, atoms aren't green and yellow and whatnot. Certain molecular structures and the way they interact with photons and whatnot, you know, that's a molecular level phenomenon, you know, in general, what you're experiencing. Okay, see, so that's what he's, you know, he's saying that there is some tenuous relationship with what to us is the least tenuous. Or the least, no, least tangible, the most tenuous. You know, what's the least tangible to us? You know, he has some tenuous interactive relationship to that. Maybe it's not very conscious, especially if it's even a higher being than an archangel. But remember when we talked about that, when they talk about a solitary messenger going across space. Even though it may not be seeing stars and galaxies and stuff, there's a slight interaction. Its net speed from point A to point B is affected by how much matter is along that path. Now, if he goes through 50 galaxies, he'll get to point B slower than if he went around those 50 galaxies, even though that might be a longer path as a, you know, relative to as the crow flies, right? Okay, so there is an interaction, even if he isn't, you know, it's like, oh no, I'm going to run into this galaxy, even though he can't see that galaxy coming, you know, at him through his, with his eyes. All right, so this is what they're getting at. All right, and when we get to the next paragraph, you'll see this, they take this to the next notch. So they're saying that it's not like they're completely unrelated. They're real. This somehow that when you go to the more fundamental level, spirit and matter aren't as separated. Does that make sense logically? Well, as I go to the more fundamental material levels, I'm getting closer and closer to the absonite foundations of physical phenomena. Right? And if I were to go through all that absonite, all the way to the absolute foundations of matter and spirit, matter and absolute spirit are different in name only, right? See, so at least experientially, they merge into one fact. So the farther you move away from the absolute in terms of experiencing the two substances, you know, the farther apart they get experientially. So not surprising that there might they are closer and more interacting. See, at the certain accepting certain of the basic energies down at that more fundamental level of energy.
Why are the materials more of a shadow than the other way around?
Okay, so the whole bit of using the shadow, you know, why does the word shadow occur in the Urantia book? You know, in this mode, does anyone know?
Plato.
Right. Right? You know, why did Jesus use that analogy? Because of Plato. Right? Remember? Plato started that analogy. His philosophic picture, you know, is based upon the idea that there's something solider than what meets the eye, like the arm of this couch. And that the arm of this couch is somehow a projection down from that higher, more solid substance. Okay? You know, he didn't call it spirit substance. He didn't, you know, didn't take it that far. But so you could kind of see he was getting shades of that idea that there was a higher substance, you know, that sort of is the substance that holds ideals. And then there's a projection to what we experience more directly in the outer life, in the external world. Okay, and even though that's not literally true, as they explain in the book, it's an analogy that works to a degree. That's why Jesus used it sometimes, because, you know, he's talking to a Greek audience a lot of times. They know that idea, and he's trying to play off of it. It's like, okay, you know that idea of Plato. Is there some truth to that? Now, there is, from the perspective of a person, which is more literal to your spirit pattern, to your personality? Spirit substance or energy substance? Right? It's spirit pattern. I mean, so from a personal perspective, spirit is the more solid, and matter is the shadow. Okay, but that's just a bias of a perspective of spirit pattern. To the energy pattern that's engaging an oxygen molecule, you know, energy actuality is the solid stuff, and spirit is a shadow. The analogy works the other way if you're coming at it from the other way. Right? That analogy is only valid if you don't turn it into an ism, if you don't, you know, try to make it a universal fact or an absolute fact. It's relatively valid from the personality perspective. Right? And I've mentioned this before, you know, when they use that shadow talking about personality, there's that great example, where they're trying to get you to think about the fact that you can't stub your toe on spirit substance yet, and your personality's spirit pattern. Therefore, how personal are you right now?
Exactly.
Not very much. You'll know that you've started to actually manifest some spirit patterns, some personality, when you can stub your toe on spirit substance. Right? Right now, it's impossible for you to have that director relationship to spirit substance, so it's impossible for your personality to manifest much at all. Right? It can't actualize yet because spirit is a shadow right now. So your personality manifestation is a shadow. That's just the facts. Did you have something? No? Okay. Yep.
So do we interact with feelings and moods? Are they real? If they are not, then they are mind correct. So mind we react to, and yet we can pass through mind. But spirit we can only react if we are put into the right frame of mind or right frame of heart.
Right, so we're going to get to that, those sorts of issues, you know, that, you know, this other energy, which is not a substance, mind energy, we have experiences in the inner life, that mind energy. We don't have any direct relationship to spirit substance there. The spirit substance is above the mind energy. Okay? You can have some indirect relationship to spirit within the mind, within your consciousness, because the mind does impinge upon, the mind energy does impinge upon the spirit energy, you know, and that mind energy takes on some of the unity flavor, quality, because of its relationship to spirit energy. So you have spiritualized mind, but you don't have, you know, literal spirit substance that you're thinking in. No one, you know, is thinking in spirit substance. Thinking is in mind. Okay. And then, you know, and so that's when you begin to recognize, okay, so the human use of the word spirit, even if someone, you know, in more recent times has wanted it to be somehow a word that wasn't just a synonym for mind, it's not too likely that they've gotten very far. Probably they're using the word spirit for one kind of mind and using mind for another kind of mind. Right? And that's what humans are doing, right? Fancy mind things are called spirit. Well, fancy mind things aren't spirit. Fancy mind things are just mind. Fancy. Okay? Even spiritualized mind is still spiritualized mind. It's not mindalized spirit, right? It's spiritualized mind. It's still mind. It's not spirit. Spirit is something transcendent. All right, so, okay, so again, you know, like, let me just, you know, read that last statement, and then we'll go on to the next paragraph. To material beings, the spirit world is more or less unreal. So spirit is not apparently the external world. It's something that you're striving for in the inner life. To spirit beings, the material world is almost entirely unreal. It's not experienced as the external world. It's something that they're striving for in their inner life. Right? Yeah. You know, so again, you know, is matter something that you should try to shun and move away from? No, it's the goal of the journey of the inner life of an archangel. The archangel is trying to work its way up to matter from lowly, common, stub your toe on it all the time, spirit. There's nothing fancy about spirit to an archangel. You know, you make your silverware out of it. Okay? It's just a substance. That very intangible, mysterious, ethereal matter substance, now that's something to strive for, to see if maybe when the grand universe is settled in light and life, maybe, just maybe, it will become tangible to you. And a whole new reality will open up to you. Okay? Yeah, all right.
I'm sorry. So, therefore, as you start out as a human, a material being, they say that, you know, like finalers, they can perceive the material world.
We're getting to that. That's coming up in a subsequent paragraph here. See, yeah, yeah. So let's just wait until we get to that. That's down here at the bottom of this of the page. Okay. All right. Read the next one.
I cannot, with exclusive spirit vision, perceive the building in which this narrative is being translated and recorded. A divine counselor from Uversa, who chances to stand by my side, perceives still less of these purely material creations. We discern how these material structures appear to you by viewing a spirit counterpart presented to our minds by one of our attending energy transformers. This material building is not exactly real to me, a spirit being, but it is, of course, very real and very serviceable to material mortals.
Okay, so that basic difference in our what we think the external world is. Okay, now, I cannot with exclusive spirit vision perceive the building in which this narrative is being translated and recorded. Okay, remember this is an archangel writing this. And so because of that, he doesn't just say this narrative is being recorded. If this was a Melchizedek, he would just say this narrative is being recorded because he's talking to the secondary midware, just dictating it to him. You don't need the contact personality and all that fanciness, right? Okay, but the archangel can't dictate it to the secondary midware that needs to write it down. The archangel has to use the contact personality, right? Has to use that downstepping mechanism of an adjuster. The archangel can input it at the high end of the energy fact of the adjuster. Okay, and the adjuster brings it down through the mystery of mysteries, brings it down, in, you know, literally into the adjutant mind, mind energy system of that contact personality, and the secondary midwayer, you know, is at eye level with that and can pull it out there. Remember, we don't have the regular circuits, which normally downstep so that an archangel and a secondary midwayer can talk to each other. We, you know, it not only goes for horizontally, this communication grid, but it goes vertically, right? It downsteps or upsteps so that beings that normally can't interact can communicate with one another. They don't have that, okay? But you do have the archangel circuit, but that's of no use. That's of no more use to a secondary midwayer than an archangel, because the archangel and his circuit are, you know, above how high a secondary midwayer can jump, right? There's no way for the secondary midwayer to plug into the archangel circuit. It's above, out of their reach, just like archangels are.
Right.
So the translate, okay, what's the translating? Is it being translated from Swahili to English? You know, or no, what do they mean by translation? Okay, you know that they were instructed to compose it in English. Okay, so you're not translating a language like that. Okay, but the archangel has it in English in his mind. Yeah, the archangel has it in English in his mind, but it's English up at that high level. It has to be translated down to English at adjutant mind level.
How does he speak English?
Divine counselors, you know, composed it in English. They all can consciousize that way. Okay, but they can't consciousize English in adjutant mind energy. They can consciousize it in a very high mind energy. It has to be translated down the mind energy system, down to, you know, so he has a form in his mind energy, his mindal self, that has to be translated down to a form in the adjutant mind energy system.
And the adjuster.
So, yeah, and the adjuster can do that. See, the adjuster is not just a spirit fact above the mind. See, there's this mysterious thing that it actually can directly interact with the mind, that it can be a mind-like energy, right? And,
That's why
it
was so fortuitous.
Okay, right, see, so this is how it's working, and, you know, even though I've been avoiding it, but let me go and just say it right here. I mean, the way you can immediately understand why it's a mind-like energy, and this mystery of mysteries isn't as mysterious, right, is which facet of the Father, of the six facets of the deity of the Father, which facet of deity is being individuated to make a thought adjuster, for those of you who have taken Total Deity, you know, the Total Deity seminar. The Infinite Upholder, right? That facet, right? The Infinite Upholder, you know, facet of deity, right, is the facet of deity that's being individuated to make an adjuster. You know, if you go from the unity viewpoint, where you see the infinite upholder facet of deity, if you turn it around to the individuality viewpoint, which of the seven absolutes do you see from the individuality viewpoint? It's one of the three potentiality absolutes.
The universal absolute.
The universal absolute. Right? And the universal absolute, right, from the individuality viewpoint, is the reservoir of the potential for mind energy. Okay, so is it mysterious that this fragment of deity has such an intimate relationship to mind? And if I turn that facet of deity around, I get the reservoir of the potential for mind energy from the individuality viewpoint. Right. So. It has this intimate relationship to mind energy, and it can be this mind conduit, just like the communication grid, remember we recognized, is a mind energy conduit. You know, they lay out a material energy plate, and a spirit energy plate parallel to it, and then they have a mind energy conduit between those two plates that they communicate through in the communication grid. And that normally takes things horizontally and vertically. You have another kind of mind energy conduit, that vertical rod that you can think of that adjuster being, right? And it can interact with the mind of the archangel. See, that's kind of what it's doing. The same way that it comes into relationship with a human's mind, it comes into relationship with that archangel's mind, picks up this paper, takes it down the elevator of its nature, and then plants it as forms in the mind energy system of the contact personality, and then the secondary midwares look at those forms in that mind energy, and they know that form is the letter, you know, T, you know, that's the word the, you know, etc. I mean, they read the English forms in that mind and write it down on a piece of paper. Okay, so translated and recorded. Right, see, there is no other way. The only way an archangel or divine counselor, those high beings, can somehow talk to a secondary midwayer, because we don't have the circuits, is this convoluted process, you know? And if that contact personality isn't sublimely disinterested in this whole thing, if it even touches that whole linkage, he'll screw it up. You know, if he touches that linkage, the word the turns into the word banana. And you're not going to get the Urantia book down, right? You're going to get gibberish coming out the other end. If he touches that at all, he has to back totally away and just let his mind energy system be used as a conduit, okay, and a point of contact. Right? And it was very hard to find someone who could be that sublimely disinterested. Okay.
So how do in a daily administrative type way, how do archangels' communications normally happen to everybody out there?
Well, here you just saw a partial answer to your question. An energy transformer can interact with both. For an energy transformer, the external world has two substances in it.
So he can transform the from the to the.
Well, but see, it goes through his, I mean, that's a personality. An energy transformer is a personality. That's why he can relate to the spirit like this, okay? And none of them are sublimely disinterested. None of them can back off and just, yeah, no, see? he would modify. He can't be hands-off. You've got to get some way that's just as hands-off and impersonal as a communication line. As if it was a machine, right? And yet, it's got to, you know, be a machine, quote-unquote, that can relate flawlessly to spirit substance and energy substance, you know, and everything in between. Okay. All right, so, see, the divine counselor, a divine counselor from Uversa, who chances to stand by my side, perceives still less of these purely material creations. All right, so an archangel is a high spirit, but a divine counselor is an even higher one. You know, all those super universe beings that are doing part one, you know, they all needed the contact personality. You know, but you know, a lot of the rest of the book, you know, they didn't need it. You know, only when you have a solitary messenger, you know, writing the adjuster papers, or an archangel, or something. You know, but all the Melchizedeks and, you know, and whatnot, they can just talk to the secondary midwares, so, you know, they don't need the contact personality. It's much more straightforward. You know, and obviously all of part three, the secondary midwares are writing it. So you don't, part four, did I say three? Yeah, part four. You know, all of part four doesn't require the contact personality at all, because the secondary midwares are just writing it. Right. So the contact personality is only used when it was needed, you know. Okay, and all right. So, but it's the divine counselor is higher because he perceives still less. Okay, of the molecular phenomenon that of the room they're in. However, it says that this divine counselor is standing standing by the side of the archangel?
That's what you were talking about, God.
Standing. Okay, so if he can walk right through the wall, how can he be standing on the floor? Why doesn't he fall through the floor? Okay. How can there be an archangel headquarters on the planet? Okay. Right. Right. Okay. So this is where you need to think a little bit more about why you stand on the planet. Why you stand on the planet? It's like, well, because my feet feel resistance to dirt. Well, that's a very universe of matter way of looking at it. But it isn't a universe of matter. It's a universe of motion. Okay? And we talked about matter back in paper 42. You know, you can think of the phenomenon of matter as being an inward motion. Whereas, for instance, the motion that is the force charge of space, primordial force, that's an outward motion. It's a universe of motion. Everything's motions. And see, so if I'm really some kind of a motion system and the Earth is some kind of a motion system, and the whole domain where I am here is a very inward domain, we got to expend a lot of energy with a rocket to get it off the planet. And this immediate domain is very inward-like. Things don't just go flying off into space. Very inward here. Why don't, you know, if it isn't really a universe of matter, so that my answer to my question about why, you know, I can stand on the ground is that dirt, you know, matter meets matter, and you know, that's just all you need to know. If we're really motion, why don't I just move all the way to the center of the Earth? Why doesn't my motion just go through all of that motion? Okay. See, if you think about it in a universe of motion, it's a lot more dynamic thing that you're seeming to passively do. I seem to be just sitting here, motionless, on this couch. But really, I'm in a dynamic equilibrium state. I'm moving inward towards the center of the Earth very fast. But at an equal speed, I'm moving outward from the center of the Earth. And so I appear to be motionless. Okay, these spirit beings, they're just the same way. They have an equilibrium relationship to this system. And just think about an automaton itself. An automaton is a sphere, they say. Okay, why doesn't that sphere collapse to zero? Why doesn't the inwardness just go all the way inward to zero and do that magical black hole thing? Okay, that radius of that automaton, it doesn't even oscillate. It's not like it doesn't. It's not like it has an average radius, you know, and it's getting bigger and smaller, pulsating. It has a fixed, rock solid, and doesn't change one iota radius, and yet it's the motion. How did you make an automaton? You made it out of the force charge. You individuated some of the force charge, some of the primordial force, which is outward. So you've added enough inwardness in some way that's hard to, obviously very abstract and hard to understand directly, but you've added some sort of inwardness to exactly balance the outwardness so that there's this radius, you know, this diameter that stays fixed. It's in perfect dynamic equilibrium. It's not a little static ball. It's not a universe of matter. It's not a matter clod, a matter particle. It's this dynamic equilibrium between inwardness and outwardness. Very precisely balanced. Okay. You might notice that you can't precisely balance the master universe that way. Master universe has to oscillate. Okay, it respirates. See, so that's telling you something about the complexity of it. That's in some way that's very hard for us to imagine. All of us, spirit beings and matter beings, see, we're all at some sort of equilibrium distance from the center of the earth. There's some way in which the inward motion and an outward motion are in balance. You know, and initially it just doesn't seem profound to us at all. It's like, well, I'm just walking on the floor. That's why I'm not going down. It's like, well, if the floor is not well built and breaks, you go down, don't you? Right? You know, and it's not like in the cartoons where the floor breaks and you stay where you were for a long time and then finally you fall. There isn't one iota of delay. Okay? None of that Wile E. Coyote sort of a thing, right? Where you stay hanging over the cliff for a while before you drop.
Straight down.
Right. There's no delay because you don't have to start moving to fall. You're falling right now. And going outward at the same time, just as fast. Everything is this dynamic system. Okay? And so the archangel doesn't relate to the inwardness and is in equilibrium, you know, have an outwardness and, you know, it's equilibrium with an inwardness at the molecular level like we do. But at the more fundamental levels, there's an inwardness to this sphere. Okay?
Not just a figure of speech that's standing.
Right. No, they're literally standing just like we are. They're in an equilibrium radius relative to the center of the earth.
You're on the third floor, and their equilibrium is on the first floor.
Right. Now, obviously, you can go to, like, well, how does that work? Well, can they walk upstairs, for instance? I mean, if they can pass through walls, how could they walk upstairs? Why wouldn't their feet just go through the steps? Okay. So you're left with some mysteries here that, you know, we could only just start speculating on. You know, maybe, do they have some ability to modify their relationship relative to the center of the earth, you know? Yeah, and we would call that floating. But no, it's not floating any more than I'm floating sitting here. See, I mean, it doesn't appear that I'm floating right now. It appears I'm sitting on a couch.
We know you are.
But we all are. We all are actually in a system of motion where there isn't any matter, there isn't any solid thing to sit on. We're all floating, quote unquote. We're all in a dynamic equilibrium. And we have the ability to walk upstairs. We have ability to alter the elevation of our equilibrium point. Think about walking up the stairs, walking up and down stairs is something much more profound than you ever imagined. You have the ability to somehow turn a knob and alter your distance relative to the center of the earth. How does that work? The fact that you have a knob that does that mysterious thing doesn't make it quite as mysterious that a secondary midway has a knob where it can turn and my hand can pass through it. And then it can turn a knob, and then my hand hits it, and my eyes can see it. We all are doing, there is nothing prosaic about life. The simplest thing is so mind-bogglingly complex and dynamic, it's ridiculous. Just to sit here like John is, with his hand on his chin on his hand, involves an incredible complex thing. And like we talk about in Reawakening Philosophy, you know, your mind is telling your body to put its hand like this and rest its chin on the hand and all this to, you know, and contemplate, you know, these mysterious things. Well, do you know that there's no connection between your mind and your body? Mind energy and matter energy are absolutely separate. And there's not one whit of overlap between the two. So how can my mind make my hand move at all, put it under my chin, or do anything else? It's not at all obvious.
Not trivial.
Okay? Yeah. And we go step through that, and we discover, lo and behold, there's a substance that can bridge the gap between the three energies that are absolutely separate, matter, mind, and spirit. There's another transcendent substance that can link them together. Deity. I mean, it requires deity for me to move my hand and put it under my chin. That's how incredibly profound everything is. To blink my eyes, anything requires deity. To see this book requires deity. To pick up this book requires deity. For you to hear me requires deity.
For you to answer those Tesla's questions.
Yeah. Do you still have the question? Okay.
you'd think Lucifer would have known that.
These things, they're so taken for granted that, you know, they lose sight of how things are profound.
In a way, for atheists or people to think that it's all done is a really testament to how nicely put together it is.
Right. Do you ever notice a little glitch where you want to move your hand, but deity doesn't notice? And there it goes. You know, and then finally your hand moves? No. Does Mother Deity ever miss a beat? Can you ever tell your eyes to blink so fast that they don't keep up with your command? All right? No.
Nope. Going back to Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah.
Why does he hesitate before he falls? Well, that's the mind doesn't recognize that the body is falling until there's a differential. If there's no differential, the mind doesn't recognize that anything has happened.
If you're listening to what he's saying, you know, that when there's no differential, the mind doesn't recognize anything has happened, wondering why Wile E. Coyote hangs there. Well, you know, I mentioned, though, you know, think about it. There's, you know, you think it's just a cartoon, but that's actually a profound philosophical reflection that's been, you know, put into cellulose there, right? You know, it speaks to this. It's like we've always believed in a universe of matter and that the things are fundamentally at zero speed and then they have to be sped up. Right. But it's actually the opposite. Right. You know, we think it just seems more logical that, you know, after all, isn't there that inertia thing, you know, and it and it's very comfortable being at rest at a certain elevation, and then, you know, you take the ground out from underneath it, and, you know, wouldn't there be a little delay where it's still comfortable, and then it's got to recognize that there's nothing underneath it anymore, and then it's got to turn on, you know, the movement thing, and, you know, get that movement thing going, and see, but that's not the way it works, right? You're already falling, right? And so that's why it doesn't work like this. And that's a little reflection. They want you to reflect on your worldview, on your philosophic understanding of your nature. You go, why don't I stay there for a little while before I fall? Why do I start falling immediately? Because you already are falling. You're all falling at a very high speed right now. But you're also going upward at the same speed. Yep.
Well, this is the reason why attempting to comprehend what deity is and how it relates to us is so profoundly important. Mm-hmm. You and your seminar, Deity and Reality.
Right. Just throwing in that little plug,
No, but it's true.
No, I mean, I'll do it for those on the webinar so they can hear that, right? I mean, yeah, that, That's the whole point. I mean, it's important to start at the beginning and methodically step your way through the basics of reality so that you can begin to recognize just how profound the simplest thing is and why it is that the greatest minds that ever lived, once they started reflecting and they recognized that there isn't anything really simple and they couldn't get anywhere with understanding what was going on, to be able to get to that same point of recognizing there is a giant question mark here and it's not apparently resolvable at all, because the greatest minds that ever lived have gotten nowhere on this question. But we can do it. With a revelation, you can go forward. One of those things is right here. Okay? So the archangel says about he and the divine counselor, we discern how these material structures appear to you, you know, these molecular structures having color and texture and whatnot, appear to you by viewing a spirit counterpart presented in our minds by one of our attending energy transformers. You're doing the same thing right now, right? You're looking at me, for instance. Am I in your mind energy system? No. I'm out here in your external world. My body is made out of matter. Your consciousness in mind energy doesn't have any overlap with the matter of my body. Your mind cannot see my body. And your eyes don't see, right? Your eyes are just a collection of molecules. They might interact with physical energies, but they don't see anything. Right? Only a mind can see. And mind doesn't interact with matter. So how do you know I'm here? How can you, quote-unquote, see me? Well, through some mysterious process, a mindal form is being molded in your mind energy system that's parallel to my body, right? As he's saying here, there's a counterpart that's being presented. See, now, the way it works for you, the form in the mind energy system that's the parallel, the counterpart of the actual external object. You know, and what you actually see, you don't see the external object, you see that form in the mind energy system. You know, and if someone didn't do a good job of copying, you're not going to see something that's very objective. Right? You know, if there's a problem with, you know, your brain or whatnot, you know, we know that there can be issues here. Okay, but we have this basic translation process that's taking material forms in the external world, translating them into mind energy forms that are related to, you know, that have a material energy like mind energy shape. But that's not the way it normally works for an archangel, right? Normally, there's spirit substance in their external world, and that's getting translated into a form, you know, that matches it in their mind energy system, and then they see that. So they're used to seeing mind energy forms that result from translating spirit energy forms in the external world into mind energy forms. They're not used to seeing the kind of mind energy forms that are the translation of material energy in the external world into a mind energy form. Right. So, the energy transformer knows all of this complexity, and it can say, okay, not, it goes, I know what it's like to take the physical and the material object and translate it into a mind energy form, and then how a person that can experience those forms experiences it. I want to get an analogous experience in that archangel's mind. So if I make this kind of form in its mind, that will, it'll be different than the kind of form that's in my mind, you know, when I look at that wall. But it will be a kind of form that, when it's interpreted from that spirit perspective, will end up with the same kind of consciousness that I have when I look at that wall. Think how complicated the physics, you know, you have to know all about the physics of spirit energy and material energy and mind energy and how they're all related. It has to make just the kind of form in that archangel's mind that it ends up having the same experience that I do in my mind when I look at that wall. Right?
Interesting, just a little side note, in the world of law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
you can have a group of people standing watching the exact same crime occurred, and the police come in and take everybody's statement, and they get 50 different versions of the same exact thing.
Right, and so why do all those crime witnesses that the police take down their statements, why do you get all these different testimonies about what they saw? Because it's not because any of them have a defective translating it from the outer life to the inner life thing going on. Let's just assume that they might, but that's not the basic problem. It's getting translated into a mind energy form properly, and the same for all of them. But the mind is energy, is not a substance. That form is not a solid, chiseled thing. Okay, that form is in a fluid. Okay, and every one of those observers has almost complete control over their mind energy system. So that the instant that form is made, it's reformed by their worldview. Okay? So you think you're objectively hearing me. Because, I mean, you're not interfering with the jiggling of your eardrum or anything. No, you're not. But your eardrum doesn't hear anything. Your mind hears. Okay? And my voice is getting turned into a form in your mind energy system, and you have almost total control over that. You can instantaneously reform it into anything. Right? And you have no consciousness of that. It doesn't matter how much you don't want it to be reformed, it's being reformed right now. You are not objectively hearing my words. You're hearing what your worldview allows for mind energy forms in your mind or self. Gosh, and nothing else. Right?
It does.
Your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and long-standing prejudices unconsciously dictate what these jiggling air molecules turn into in terms of a consciousness in your mind. And it doesn't matter how much I talk, you know, unless you have gotten above your worldview and have begun to reform it so that it doesn't mess with this objective implantation of the external world into your mind, right? You know, then you can't read what's on the pages of this book. You can't hear the words I'm saying. Truthfully, all you can hear and see is a mirror, reflection of yourself. Right? That's what taking delight in cultivating reflective thinking is about. Trying to get over that initial bias that we all have. You can't help but have. Okay? And it's sad to record that most people have no awareness that this is going on. They think that they objectively see things. You know, that seeing is believing. Or something like that, you know, we'll say. That's not the way it works. Yeah?
People accuse me all the time. Well, you just can't hear. You're deaf. No, I hear exactly what I want to hear.
Right, and... You know, and it's even more so, you know, there's none so blind as those who will not see.
Oh, well,
Right? See, I mean, you know, just, you know, it's bad enough in a passive mode. But of course, you know, you can be, you know, you can have varying degrees of active corruption of this. See, think about how this is just like the problem of us being able to read this paper at all. A paper composed by an archangel who can't pick up a pen, you know, on a piece of paper and write it down, can't jiggle air molecules or, you know, or even connect mindily to a secondary midwifery so he can hear the paper in his mind and write it down. Right? They had to find this person that could function not as a person for a little while, back the personality stuff off into a corner so they could use his effectively depersonalized energy system over here on the other side, you know, to be this passive conduit. Because if that individual got involved at all, his worldview would have translated every word. And the midwayer wouldn't have gotten what the archangel wrote. It would have gotten what that ignorant contact personality, you know, thought. Okay? This is why any auto-revelatory process that humans do can't be used to give you a revelation. Because it doesn't matter how much you don't think you're involved in some mysterious mindful phenomenon that is going on. You are. You know? There might not even be any sort of an external source. You know, you might be totally generating it internally. But even if you give someone the benefit of the doubt and say there's actually an external source, and let's say you have you're talking about like an actual prophet. You know, like say Samuel or Isaiah. Okay, someone who's validated as an actual prophet, someone who an external being was contacting. Okay. Doesn't matter how adept that Melchizedek was, for instance, like, you know, the author of the previous paper, you know, when he contacted Ezekiel or some other prophet when he was here as one of the receivers. Okay? He can put something into Isaiah's mind, and then Isaiah reforms it into something that feels better. Right? Just like your adjuster. Your adjuster would love to put a form in your mind that stays as he formed it, well formed. But no, he can't. The instant he lays out a perfect thought form in your mind energy system, you reform it so it's comfortable feeling and is a mirror. You turn his revelation into affirmation. Right? It's like, well, I don't want to turn his revelation into affirmation. Well, guess what? If you haven't taken delight in cultivating being something vastly beyond what you are to begin with, that's all you can do is reform everything that your adjuster forms in your mind or anything that comes off the pages of this book. Right? You have to take delight in cultivating being able to relate to objective reality objectively. Instead of subjectively, instead of making everything you see, hear, touch, taste, or gets implanted by an adjuster, you know, being only what you expect, right? You have to spend years of earnest effort to even begin to have this ability. You're not given this ability by grace. Okay, so you see, and we haven't even begun to touch on how significant it is. This is what this part of this preface is about. This all-important issue of how much corruption you're imposing upon the cosmic inputs, you know, unwittingly. You know, for instance, in the secular totalitarianism section, why is it that many earnest religionists are unwitting secularists? Because when secularism inputs into their mind, they turn it into sacredness. And it sounds like sacredness in their mind, they can't experience that secularness objectively. They're so biased to their spiritual consciousness, to their unity consciousness. They can take the most twisted thing ever, and when it comes into their mind, it turns into this perfect, beautiful spirit thing, and they love it. And they follow everything that Lucifer says. That's why those angels followed Lucifer, because he's saying, you know, twisted things. Those twisted things go into their mind, and they get reformed into beautiful things, and they hear beautiful things, and they following him. They follow him, that beauty. Why would you not follow beauty? It's like, well, it's not beautiful. Yes, it is. No, it's not, because you're not objective. Right? You know, and if seraphim that have lived for billions and billions and billions of years can't receive inputs objectively, how objective do you think you're receiving your inputs? So, this is what he's trying to get at, is this whole issue. That if you're going to actually try to become spiritual, step one is to recognize that spirit is in the external world. And the reality of it is not subject to anything. But if it comes in, you know, it's not going to come in through your normal external world input, you know, stimuli mechanisms. It's going to come in through that other end of the mind as a stimulus input. How likely is it that you're going to hold those spirit stimuli well-formed if you can't, like you're pointing out, eyewitnesses to a, you know, an accident or something can't even hold material inputs well formed. Right? Yeah. When you can't literally touch spirit substance. I mean, one of the things that helps me to not, if I just had my eyes, I could start to really morph the arm of this chair into all kinds of goofy things. But I keep grounded by my sense of touch. My sense of touch helps me. It's like, okay, no matter what I see, I can't see something that's 5 foot wide because it doesn't feel 5 foot wide. And I can't see something that's rough because it doesn't feel rough, it feels smooth. We use our sense of touch to help keep our sense of sight grounded. Okay? Well, your sense of sight doesn't see any spirit substance. Okay? And your sense of touch doesn't touch any spirit substance. And yet, you can get those inputs. So how, what do you have to keep those experiences grounded? Not much, do you? It's going to be very difficult to keep those spirit, those experiences objective at all. All right, let's see. Okay, so he's the energy transformer. Remember, that's one of the two personal types of master physical controllers. It's interacting with these persons. Is working to give them a mind energy form so that they can see green, they can see flat, they can, you know, etc. So this material being is not exactly real to me. You know, I don't think of it as an external world phenomenon. But it is, of course, very real and very serviceable to material mortals. It's a good thing that we do have something that can start our relationship to cosmos in a grounded way. All right, let's keep going.
There are certain types of beings who are capable of discerning the reality of the creatures of both the spiritual, of both the spirit and the material worlds. Belonging to this class are the so-called fourth creatures of the Havona Servitals and the fourth creatures of the Conciliators. The angels of time and space are endowed with the ability to discern both spirit and material beings, as also are the ascending mortals subsequent to deliverance from the life in the flesh. After attainment of the higher spirit levels, the ascenders are able to recognize material Marantia and spirit realities.
Okay, the next paragraph going to give us, two paragraphs, is going to give us a little bit more on on that issue of ascenders. So let's hold that off for the moment. But just notice, okay, there. I already kind of pointed this out. He's pointing out that there's some beings, especially like, you know, great examples are those fourth creatures, where by nature they have their mindal selves. Their body energy system is made in such a way that when mind energy seats on that, you know, and it seats upon their quote-unquote brain, that mind energy system has a very immediate ability, their mindal self has a very immediate ability to receive and properly form inputs from both a spirit external world and a material external world. Just by nature, their mind does a quite decent objective job of having a parallel to what's out there. Okay, and they point out angels are this way too. Now, see, obviously that's logical. I mean, if an angel was like an archangel, you know, and all of the material stuff was really just, you know, wispy at best, how could it be so intimately involved in your material doings and whatnot? It's got to be able to, you know, see the material world basically like you do. If you know, how could it build material speed bumps for you if it didn't relate to material things? Okay, let's keep going here, and then we'll think about exactly how it works with ascenders.
There is also here with me a mighty messenger from Uversa, an ascendant, a just-refused, one-time mortal being, and he perceives you as you are, and at the same time he visualizes the solitary messenger, the Supernaphim, and other celestial beings present. Never in your long ascendancy will you lose the power to recognize your associates of former existences. Always, as you ascend inward in the scale of life, will you retain the ability to recognize and fraternize with the fellow beings of your previous and lower levels of experience. Each new translation or resurrection will add one more group of spirit beings to your vision range without in the least depriving you of the ability to recognize your friends and fellows of former estates.
Read that next paragraph too.
All this is made possible in the experience of ascending mortals by the action of the indwelling thought adjusters. Through their retention of the duplicates of your entire life's experiences, you are assured of never losing any true attribute you once had. And these adjusters are going through with you as a part of you, in reality, you.
As you.
As you.
Okay, so you were talking about this whole bit of like becoming a finaliter, or in this case, you know, they got snatched out of the finaliter core and became a mighty messenger, made a mighty messenger by the Paradise Trinity. And they tell you that they can still see the tables and couches in this room just like we do. And yet they can also see solitary messengers. Okay, how does that work? Okay, is it because a mighty messenger or a finaliter is a being sort of in and of its ascending or, you know, ascended self very... spans a very vast vertical spread? No. Okay. This is another reason why that analogy of thinking about the adjuster as a vertical rod, okay, is helpful. Okay. And it maintains that. Okay. So the adjuster comes down from the infinite level and comes all the way down to where you are, and doesn't come down as a ball floating down, okay, this rod is extended down, you know, and it's just as much up there right at the top right now as it is down at the bottom right now. It spans that whole vertical spectrum. And your mindful self, like the mindful self you have right now, has almost no vertical depth to it. It's a very shallow little, you know, region of mind that has just a little bit of overlap with the help of the spirit of unification, the spirit of truth, with the bottom end of the adjuster right now. Okay. And as you ascend, you know, say through the local universe, you know, all those 570 different Marantia bodies, okay, you really don't get that much thicker. You know, you're going to get a little thicker than you are. You're not going to be quite as shallow as you are right now. Okay? But you still are, in relative terms, are not that deep of a fact. You know, there's this vertical rod, and you're just moving up, you know, that rod. And eventually you fuse to it, you know, and you're glued to it and continue to move up. Okay? But, you know, you, as that Marantia self, don't have deep, deep roots or high, high tendrils going upward. You know, you're vertically, you're quite localized. Okay. But especially, obviously, when you actually fuse to that other self, that adjuster self is different. It isn't, you know, so localized vertically. It has this vast vertical range and keeps that. And so even when you get way up in this vertical, you know, in your vertical relationship with the adjuster, it still is down there. And like they're saying, I mean, the more you go along with this adjuster, the more there really isn't two selves, it's just one self. I mean, you know, especially once you leave the local universe as a first stage spirit, at that point, you know, there's really not much usefulness anymore to saying there's two selves in intimate association. It's just one self. Like you're saying here, not, you know, it's more than just as a part of you, in reality, as you, right? And so that mighty messenger, that you, that self, right, you know, has this augmentation of vertical nature. I mean, it's just as much down there at the low level. So that, see, that mind energy system that originally was just the adjusters and now is part of that mighty messenger's whole mindful self has a part that's way down there that can still receive inputs from the lowly things, you know, and establish forms in that mind energy system, and it can still see just like you are now. It's still down there, able to have adjutant mind energy-like forms. Okay? But it also can have mind energy forms way, way up there at solitary messenger-like level, too. You know, and so that mind energy can visualize some very, very high external world fact. Right now, I can't visualize some high external world fact because my mind isn't high enough. I mean, my mind isn't even high enough to visualize a secondary midware. You know, if they have their knob turned to invisibility mode, right? Right? I mean, it's not like they're not in the external world. It's not like they can't, you know, it isn't possible to translate that fact in the external world into a mind energy form. But the necessary mind energy form to visualize that is above the level of my mind energy. Right? I don't have a high enough ceiling to take that as an input. Okay? And there's a lot of beings, they can take in all kinds of high input things, but not low input things. Right? This archangel, his mind doesn't go deep enough to visualize this couch. He can visualize things higher. Okay? So just, you know, you think about it. You got all this external, the outer external world is a hierarchy, and the mind is a hierarchy, and it inputs, you know, horizontally, parallel. The higher the external thing, the higher the mind energy that, you know, to receive it. So, you know, think about your hourglass analogy of your mind energy system, right? The value of having an upper domain of the hourglass, some spiritualized mind, some higher mind. The kind of mind energy forms that can be in the upper domain of your hourglass, you can have forms in there that can visualize a lot higher things in the cosmos than mere adjutant mind in the lower domain. Yeah. It isn't just when you spiritualize it, now it feels so much more blissy. Okay? It literally is an energy system that can hold higher forms, like the inputs that are coming in from the top of the hourglass, from spirit substance. Right?
So is that why, you know, Jesus was able to get rid of his thought adjuster, was able to, you know, move on, let's put it that way, or become disassociated? Because he actually achieved that shaft.
Yes.
Aspect.
Right, so that, right, see that low, that, man. Right, I mean, Jesus doesn't, you know, Michael doesn't need the adjuster long term, because Michael has built up a self that has that spans that whole vertical range himself, right? And he's still Jesus today. Michael, as a master son, is not like a creator son. As a master son, he can experience things down at this level just like we do, because he has a mind that goes all the way down to that level now. He didn't have a mind that went all the way down to that level before. Right? But now he does. Right? But he's also a personalized deity. He's also a creator. He started with a mind that could see a thought adjuster in free space. You know, something that not even a solitary messenger or whatnot can do. So he started with a mind that's higher, you know, and now he has a mind also that's a lot lower. But think about the parallel, okay? So once you have a master son that now has extended his mind all the way down from the top down to the bottom, if you're a mighty messenger or a finaliter, you got a mind that started at the bottom and it's now stretched all the way to the top with the help of the adjuster. So now you two are very parallel, right? Finaliters and master sons, see, are a very parallel phenomenon. They work together very well because they're beings that are complementary in that full vertical sense. Whereas a being that only spans some part of the vertical range can't be anywhere near as complementary with either. Right? So that's why they say they know that there's going to be some incredible manifestations of the super additive consequence in the absentite age. You bring those two vertical, you know, those two minds that span the full span of the vertical, you actually bring them together and get a super additive consequence of that full vertical span. What are you going to get? You're going to get something that doesn't fit in the vertical, see? It already fills the whole vertical of the finite. It's not going to fit in the finite, I mean. it's going to require the greater headroom of the absentite to fit this super additive consequence. Okay. That's what's going on. All right, let's see here, what else do we have? This is exactly what I thought, that we would just finish this preface. let's see, let's make sure we didn't, there aren't some other fun little details that we want to, I think we pretty much covered that. So, you know, see, like they're saying, all this is made possible, you know, because of that thought adjuster. Now, the only qualification, I say, through their retention of the duplicates of your entire life's experiences, don't overplay that. Remember, we've talked about that some recently. The adjuster doesn't penetrate all the way down, like into the lower domain of your hourglass. It only penetrates down into the upper domain. So the ability, say, of that mighty messenger to still see things like you do right now is because that mighty messenger isn't just an adjuster that's been fancied in some way. Right? I'm the me right now that can experience down at this lowest level is going to fuse with that adjuster. Now, I add the final little bottom piece that's even lower than the adjuster. Now, and so the adjuster can see down to that lowest level only through me. And that's we mentioned that recently, I think, that you know at fusion, you have that first direct relationship to the supreme experiential level in the inner life, and it has the first direct relationship with the finite experiential level. I mean, think about it even a little bit more literally, you know, that fusion, you know, another way of thinking about that fusion is, so you've got this vertical rod that's coming all the way down, and instead of thinking of yourself going in on psychic circles and fusing to the circumference of it like we do sometimes, think of yourself fusing to the end. See, and extending that rod all the rest of the way down.
Where's personality?
Okay. And see, the personality is identifying with some mindful self. Once you fuse, see, now that personality can't identify just with your Marantia self or just your mortal self. The two selves are fused together, so when it identifies with one self, it identifies with both selves because they aren't really two selves. It's one self now. That's how the adjuster gets personalized from the bottom up. See, it doesn't get personalized from the top down, it gets personalized from the bottom up. So personality is, you can think of it initially gluing to that little tip that you just stuck on the end, right? And then that personalization penetrates upward through that infinitely vertical rod. Okay? You know, and more that personality now has an avenue to manifest at higher and higher levels, the more it can penetrate upward through that self. And there is no vertical limit to this personality manifestation. It can continue to manifest upward and upward and upward until finally it's manifesting on co-absolute levels. Right? And your external world is the cosmos infinite. Right? It will be one day, beyond the fourth absonite age. All right, so that's what's going on there, and you know, and definitely when they say, you know, and they italicize the you, you know, in reality as you, it just, you know, it starts out in truth, and then like we were saying, more and more as time goes on, truth becomes factualized. Literalized. All right, let's keep going here.
But I almost despair of being able to convey to the mortal mind the nature of the work of the celestial artisans. I am under the necessity of constantly perverting thought and distorting language in an effort to unfold to the mortal mind the reality of these Marantia transactions and near spirit phenomena. Your comprehension is incapable of grasping, and your language is inadequate for conveying the meaning, value, and relationship of these semi-spirit activities. And I proceed with this effort to enlighten the human mind concerning these realities with the full understanding of the utter impossibility of my being very successful in such an undertaking.
Okay, now notice that last statement carefully. Don't overplay it. It does say utter impossibility, which is means it's completely unqualified, you know, the word utter there means it's, you know, an unqualified impossibility of being very successful. It doesn't say successful. It says very successful, okay? It's utterly impossible for him to be very successful. But if you supply some favorable conditions, he might be slightly successful, just a tish, okay, maybe. But not if you haven't taken any delight in cultivating. Not if every input you know, that comes into you is immediately perverted and distorted, as he said there. You know, remember what perverted means. Turned 180 degrees around. You know, the PER means it's all the way through, that VER, that versus the turning, it's turned all the way through. Right? So initially, as you experience this celestial artisan paper, it's going to be exactly 180 degrees false, what you're experiencing. Okay, do you have the courage, okay, and the humility to start with that? That your initial thoughts about what this all means is going to be 180 degrees off from what you're seeking to get from the paper.
So is this back again to where he, you know, because his ability to take his spirit concepts and put them into the English language, so to speak, is he's saying here, you don't have the language. You don't have the experience to be able to understand what I'm going to try and tell you.
Right, so like the language, those forms. You know, I mean, yeah, I know what you're asking. Okay, so think about that translating thing that we were talking about, bringing it down the adjuster. Another aspect of that translating, it's not just downstepping, which it is, but there's an issue of vertical capacity here, right? It's, you know, the archangel has the English in his mind, and that English is very deep because his mind is a lot deeper than ours. It's not just higher than ours, it's also deeper. Okay, lowers it down into the contact personality. That contact personality's mind is not that deep. So, you know, this is like letterboxing, or, you know, is this like letterboxing, or is it like pan and scan? I mean, you know, what's going on here? It's like, well, okay, no letterboxing, that wouldn't be appropriate, because you can see the whole, you know, height and width of the original film. Oh, it's more like the pan and scan thing, right? There's parts of it that are chopped off. Like, and so you think about, well, how did they do this? So you take this full vertical thing and they bring it down. Do they just give you the bottom chunk and chop off the top? Do they like pick something in the middle a little bit and chop off the top and the bottom? You know, there's a limit of what can fit down into that contact personality's mind, or even can fit into the secondary midwearer's mind. Okay? But the archangels and all the other authors take this into account. They know that when it gets translated down like that and chopped or whatever, that they've made it so that what they're putting in will still have the appropriate truth flowing through it, even though it's factually much circumscribed. Okay, so think of the artistry of this. That they make it so that even when it gets chopped up a bit, the truth can still flow through it. They know how to do this. So there's a lot of, you know, masterly artistry to what they're doing. Okay, but, you know, back to what they're saying here. Okay, so he's under the necessity of constantly perverting thought and distorting language. So this corrupting, this chopping, whatever, you know, is at face value, it's severe, okay? You're going to have to use your insights to kind of penetrate inside of the kind of corrupted fascia on this mind form as it was crammed into this, you know, into the mind and got all crumpled up. You're going to have to penetrate through that to try to find the thread of truth. And another thing about this, forget about, you know, what the archangel is doing here with revelation and stuff. Just think about you trying to establish some sort of a higher spiritual life in your inner life. You're very earnest. You want to be as genuine a religionist as you can, okay? You'd love to do what Jesus tells us to do up there in the discourses on religion. You know, what is that? Paper 155, isn't it? I'm remembering right. The reason I want you to actually go and study those some as sort of homework. I better make sure I'm thinking of the right paper. It's so hard to find papers when you don't have the top here. Let's see, paper 150. Let's see here. I think it's 155, isn't it? Yeah. Paper 155, section 5 and 6. That's 1728. The Discourse on True Religion, section 5. And then the second Discourse on Religion, section 6. And paper 155 there. You'd like to do, Jesus is talking about there, you'd like to actually do this religion of the spirit, quote-unquote, thing. Remember, as those sections, they talk about the religion of the spirit. Okay. Now, you've been spending all this time talking about spirit as a substance, you know, thinking of it as a literal thing in the external world. How easy is it for you to establish the religion of the spirit? Is it just something that, now that I've been told to do that, I can just do that tomorrow? Just, you know, and I can get really solidly grounded in the religion of the spirit, just like the arm of this couch. No. Can you see spirit substance? No. Can you touch spirit substance? No. All of us have, you know, remember how in those sections they contrast. You want the religion of the spirit, not the, and it's kind of dripping with, you know, icky, the religion of the mind. You don't want that religion of the mind. You want the religion of the spirit. You're going, yes, I'm not going to do that. Okay, what do you have right now? You have the religion of the mind. And can you really in any direct way have the religion of the spirit? No. Because you can't stub your toe on spirit substance yet. Okay? So you have to try to start with your religion of the mind. You know, and you have such a religion of the mind, like we were saying, that the word spirit initially was just a synonym for the word mind. And maybe, at best now, it's fancy mind. Right? Way sideways, not up in the mind energy system. Right? You've got to try to somehow get a higher and higher quality religion of the mind to the point where it's more and more spiritualized. You know, more and more religion of spiritualized mind. You know, that at least is trying to look towards the one day when you can more directly have the religion of the spirit. Okay. Because there's no immediacy to having the religion of the spirit, and the religion of the spirit is beautiful in the eyes of celestial beings, because it's literally like well-formed spirit energy. Okay. Because we all have religions of the mind, you know, and how does this work when you bring spirit stuff down into our minds? It's perverted and distorted, it says. Oh, that's why the revelators say that our religions are grotesque. Because it doesn't matter how earnest that and humble that religionist is, he doesn't actually have a religion of the spirit, because he did if it would be beautiful, but he has a religion of the mind. And it's not just merely the mind, it's got some inputs from spirit that have gotten all perverted and distorted, and they're now grotesque. Okay? That's why they use that word grotesque. Yep.
Well, wouldn't you say, take Jesus as just a man, wouldn't you say his religion is beautiful?
By the time he's, third circler, second circler, first circler, it's getting more beautiful. During his public ministry, when it's basically Michael, God and man, of course it's beautiful. Right? But that's not what we've got.
Right? No.
Okay. You know, that brings in that whole issue of the difference between the faith of Jesus, say, and the faith of Paul.
The boy screwed up.
You know? Right, you know, and why the preface to the last paper is so long, like this preface is. and we're running out of time. Right, that this challenge, you know, don't, you know, I'm trying to really drill this in, to not be even remotely satisfied with your religion right now. It's a religion of material mind, and it's a far cry from a religion of the spirit yet. Okay? And one of the things that's in those discourses on religion, they're talking about the religion of the spirit. You know, if you actually start to get some measure of the religion of the spirit, then you start to do that effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and progress. You can actually begin to go through that sequence and get to progress. So how much progress are humans making when we all have religions of the mind? Not much progress. You'd like to have progress. Humans would like to have progress so much that they've created an ism dedicated to the word progress. Progressivism. Okay? Even if it wasn't an ism, can we even visualize progress with a religion of the mind? No, we can't. What we visualize in turn, what we see and call progress with our religion of the mind is perverted and distorted. It's grotesque. And if we actually achieve manifesting what we see in our outer life, will our civilization be well? No. Our civilization will collapse. Right, that's, it gets into the whole emergency and what we're up against. The same problem the archangel is facing. Yep.
Isn't it a contrast of, you know, looking at the gauge when we talk about grotesque? Because, you know, we're starting out, you know, at the very, very bottom level, and we have a very, very far way to go. So if we're starting out, you know, at, you know, the pond scum level, the very bottom level, grotesque is something.
When I said earlier, I didn't say hate what you are right now. I said don't be satisfied with what you are right now. Know that there's always something better than anything that you have right now. Never be satisfied. Always be hungry. Hunger and thirst for righteousness. You know, did Jesus say, today, but not tomorrow, hunger and thirst for righteousness? No, stay hungry and thirsty. Always. Never be satisfied with where you are. Keep trying to take it up. Spirit gravity does have the ability to begin to give you some truth to you, you know, in terms of a religion of the spirit. If you take delight in cultivating a mind that actually has an actively functioning upper domain, you know, and as we develop this, you know, again in one of our presentations, you know, about that effort, struggle, progress, those eight steps, that path to progress, and how that's related to the levels of meaning, and right, this all involves having a mind that goes well beyond what you have to begin with. All right, let's see here. What else do we have? Distorting language in an effort to unfold to the mortal mind the realities, Maranja transactions, and near-spirit phenomena. Let's see, what else do we have there?
We got one more paragraph.
I think we got everything there. I just wanted to make sure we didn't miss anything because we get off on these tangents. Okay, let's read the last paragraph here.
I can do no more than attempt to sketch a crude parallelism between mortal material activities and the manifold functions of the celestial artisans. If the Urantia races were more advanced in art and other cultural accomplishments, then I could go that much farther in an effort to project the human mind from the things of matter to those of Maranja. About all I can hope to accomplish is to make emphatic The fact of the reality of these transactions of the Marantia and the spirit worlds.
Okay, let's just do that last thing first, and then we'll do the other significant thing in there. See what his final statement is? About all I can hope to accomplish. You know, and he said hope because remember the word despair literally that we had in the previous paragraph there? That means hopeless, literally. Okay. About all I can hope to accomplish is to make emphatic the fact of the reality of these transactions of the Marantian spirit world. See, that he knows that's probably about all he can achieve. But if he can achieve that, that'll be huge. If you can begin to at least imagine that there's a literal external world of Marantia and spirit substance. Spirit is first a word that describes the external world, and second a word that describes the inner life, instead of the other way around. Because if you start with it as a word that's confined to the inner life, then it's subject to your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices, and you're never going to get the reality of spirit. You're going to get a mirror reflection. You know, and it's a funhouse mirror, like he said, perverted and distorted. Right? It's going to be grotesque, just like your body in those funhouse mirrors is grotesque. Right? Okay, and then the other key thing he has in there. So he's going to attempt to sketch, not just sketch, but attempt to sketch a crude parallelism. But look what he's going to do. If the Urantia races were more advanced in art and other cultural accomplishments, then could I go that much farther in an effort to project the human mind from the things of matter to those of Marantia? That last statement, to project the human mind from the things of matter to those of Marantia. There's a word that is finally defined in the Urantia book. It's one of the very last paragraphs of the book. That says that exactly. What is the word that describes the projection of the human mind from the things of matter to those of Marantia? It has three letters in it.
Art.
That's the true definition of the word art. He's trying to write a paper about the celestial artisans, right? He's trying to give you a relationship to the genuine, true word art. The projection of the human mind from the things of matter to those of Marantia. Yeah, if anything else is called art, it's an abuse of the word. That's the only valid use of the word art. If it's all about in the plane of matter, it's not art. If it's some attempt to jump the person from matter to spirit, it's not art. True art is an attempt to project a material up to the Marantia. And since we didn't even know about this Marantia substance until the fifth epical revelation, we've got a lot of work to do on true art. Now that we actually know what it is, you know, if we can start to get a better sense of what Marantia is, maybe we can start to get a better sense of what I should be doing as an artist. What I should be doing with matter. What makes matter project towards Marantia? What arrangement of matter projects it towards Marantia? Yeah. You know, rather than, like I was saying, tries to get the person who's experiencing the art to jump to spirit. Well, if you achieve that, what do you think spirit is? What will you actually get him to jump to? That grotesque stuff. That's why I don't want to do that. Start, that's too big of a step. Okay, you can't do that. You have no direct relationship to spirit. You want your art to be true. It'll be forced to be false if you try to take it from matter to spirit. In order for it to stay, have any hope of staying true, you need to just take that first baby step from matter to Marantia.
Okay. Which is a pretty big step.
It is a very big step. And it's not a step that you can do as a religionist. You know, religion, like in the threefold actuality chart, is in the spirit block. Okay? You need to have a philosophic mind to know how to take matter towards Marantia. Scientific mind's not going to do it. Religious mind's not going to do it. You need the super additive consequence of the relationship between individuality and unity, between matter and spirit. Marantia is the super additive consequence of the relationship between material energy and spirit energy. Right? It's the substance of philosophy. Okay? You know, the more you have a personal living philosophy in the upper domain of the hourglass, the more you have a soul made out of Marantia substance. You can only make Marantia substance is in the likeness of philosophy. It's not in the likeness of religion or in the likeness of science. So, and you'll see as we go next time when we get into the first section, you'll see them play off of that, the archangel play off of that fact. Okay, so there it is, you know, in not even close to a nutshell.
And very quickly.
Yep.
And Reawakening Philosophy 2 starts.
And so does Reawakening Philosophy 1. Both the Reawakening Philosophies start here in September. You know, just I wanted to, you know, to spend all this time on this because it's just very, very important to recognize that this this absence of three elements in our worldview is why our philosophy has never been able to go very far, and it's why our souls have never been able to grow very much, and why we've never been able to be that personal, and why there's now an emergency situation developing. And it's very, very important to try to break yourself away from this old ingrained way of thinking about the word spirit. Put it out there literally as something in the external world. So that you can, so it's something that you don't even remotely possess right now, but you're striving to somehow bridge the gap between your inner life and that stuff in the outer life. Okay, it's not something that you're immediately feeling. It's not on that second level of meaning. It's something very, very far away, but it's just sitting there objectively waiting for you to get to it. And because it's out there in the external world, it's not just in inner lives. If we can all actually get to that objective fact in the outer life, we can begin to be kindred minds. But if, as long as spirit is just something that's subject to the whims of the fluid of our minds, we're never going to get there. See, it doesn't matter what I'm thinking in my mind, that brick of spirit substance doesn't change. Right? That's what you're trying to come into relationship to, something that is not subject to your thoughts. Right? In the same way that the arm of this couch is not subject to your thoughts. And if we can all find that immutable fact in the external world, now we can begin to come together. All right, let's take a moment to reflect on that.